birthday party?
Welcome to the Abracadam Podcast, and I'm your host, stand-up comedy magician Danny Whitson. Like always, Abracadamets, I hope you're getting stuff done, son, hitting that grind, making them dreams happen. It's been a pretty slow week here at the Whitson Hub. It's kind of slow, but hey, not bad. Sometimes slow is nice, you know what I'm saying? I'm keeping my fingers crossed that COVID doesn't get all out of hand again and we go into lockdown. I am vaccinated. And I gotta be honest, when I first heard that this vaccine prevents Delta, I was a little upset because I had just bought a whole thing of these Delta 8 gummies and wrong Delta. Okay. All right, wrong Delta. There we go. We're good. No, seriously, though, folks. I promise, man, this damn virus doesn't give a shit who you vote for. I promise. It don't care. It don't care. So let's keep our fingers crossed that we don't go back into some kind of damn lockdown due to this pandemic. Here's a little observation. I was thinking about this the other day. And this goes out to my dear close friends who call me and they like to leave me a voicemail. Stop. Don't leave a voicemail no more. Not unless you're like hanging by a cliff and you've got like some super personal information you have to tell me. Just text me. Say, hey man, call me back. That way I don't have to delete everything, go into my voicemail and listen to your message and hear you say, hey, call me back, and then delete it, and then delete it, and it doesn't get all clogged up. So you can make my life easier, friends. I love y'all. You know who you are. Other than that, man, let's get this show rolling. Okay, well, today's episode is brought to you by Bob's Washboard Wash and Fold Services. Guys, if you hate doing laundry as bad as I do, then you got to check out Bob's Washboard Wash and Fold Services. It's one of the easiest things you'll ever do. The easiest way to wash your clothes is at Bob's Washboards. All you got to do is drop off your dirty laundry, leave, go do something productive, go take a nap, go do whatever you want to do, come back, and your clothes will be clean, dry, and folded and ready to go. Bob's Washboard Wash and Fold Services, located at 122 Randolph Road, Oak Ridge, Tennessee. You can give Bob a call at 865-951-3237. Bob also offers a delivery and pickup service for senior citizens or for anyone who is homebound. Definitely check that out as well, but don't hesitate. You know you got some pile of dirty clothes over there in the corner creeping you out at night thinking it's a monster, but no, it's just your underwear. So don't hesitate to go to Bob's Washboard Wash and Fold Services to get your laundry needs taken care of today. All right, Abracadamets. Now, today's guest is somebody who I've known for a few years now, and I gotta be honest, he is definitely one of the hardest working comics out there. He is everywhere, he's grinding, he knows how to make things happen. So, he's not just a comic either, though. He's a filmmaker. He's also got a book out, too, yeah. So I tell you what, if you will, Abracadamets, sit back and relax and enjoy my fun conversation with stand-up comedian Plug Chapman. All right, I'm excited. I got my man Plug Chapman here today. How you doing, Plug?
Man, I'm blessed to be able to go outside and breathe fresh air, man. That's all, you know what I mean?
Well, I tell you what, I've known you for a few years now, but I tell you what, if you don't mind, will you go ahead and introduce yourself to the listeners?
What's up, everybody? I am comedian Plug Chapman. Well, I got a few hats I wear. I'm a comedian. I'm a filmmaker. I'm an author. I just do a lot of stuff, man. Dad, whole bunch of stuff. But yeah, that's me, Plug Chapman.
Brother, you have been busy. You have been busy these past couple years, man. Filmmaker, huh?
Yeah, man.
That's my awesome.
Let my grandmama tell it. I ain't doing nothing. You ain't down there doing nothing. What you doing today? I'm busy, Grandmama. You ain't busy doing a damn thing. You ain't busy.
Well, you know, the thing, man, that I've always admired about you, Plug, is, I mean, when people talk about the comedy grind, and, you know, the grind is tough. It really is tough. But it would be nothing to see Plug Chapman in Atlanta and then the next day Plug out there grinding in Nashville. I mean, you would pop up. I remember one time I was at Zany's and looked in and there was you and Jamie Ward. And I was like, what the hell y'all doing in Nashville? Damn.
Yeah, man, you know, this is a business where you not only have to constantly reinvent yourself, you have to always be out. You can't blow up as a comedian or as an entertainer from the house. You know what I mean? That's, so you gotta be everywhere. People are willing to give you some stage time, man.
And I mean, man, you are, dude. You have put in the work. You have put in the time. And now I want to get right into this too, because this is one of the coolest things. Something happened to you that everyone, every comic, I don't care who you are, would have loved to been in your situation and got the opportunity that you got. But you got the opportunity to work with Kevin Hart, correct?
Yeah.
All right. Now when we say Kevin Hart, we're not just talking about some comic. We're talking about, I mean, arguably the biggest name in show business right now. And I mean, he's definitely a hell of a stand-up comic. So how did that happen? It was Heart of the City, correct?
Yeah, Heart of the City. I got a call one day from a comedian here in Atlanta named Dan Glazer. Now, Dan is, he's an older guy, and Dan is what we call a comics comic, because Dan is one of those guys that just loves comedy. He's not doing it to make it to television. He's not doing it for stardom. He just loves comedy, and he wants to help as many comics get to that next plateau as he can. I've even attributed him to as far some of my success as far as just me taking comedy more serious, because when I moved back from LA to Atlanta, I wasn't really going out every night. And I would see Dan, and he said one night, he said, I was working a job. I had like 40 hours a week, working extra jobs, just trying to stay afloat. And Dan was like, Plug, you want to be a comedian? You want to do stand-up? Is that, you know, your career goal? I was like, yeah. He was like, man, you got to be out every night. He was like, man, every time I see you, he's like, man, you just as good as some of the top guys in the city, man. You got to start coming out. The next day I went to work and was like, yeah, I only want to work 20 hours now. I need more time to do stand-up. But to tie that all up, Dan calls me one day and he's like, hey, you ever been on TV? And I'm like, not for comedy, for crime, but not telling jokes. And he was like, well, I got word through the grapevine that Kevin Hart and his production people are going to be filming a new show where they are specifically wanting to take comics who've never been on TV, give them a shot, you know, to do stand-up. I was like, hey, sign me up. So over the next few weeks, you know how this game is, man. We hear shit and just keep going about our business. And if it happens, it happens. So the next couple of weeks, I got an email saying they were about to do auditions for the show. So I go up to the Atlanta Comedy Theater, and they got like a whole, it's like 25 comics supposed to do like 4 minutes a piece. My name's not on the list. And so one of the a young lady by the name of Christina, she's actually married to another comedian here. She saw me up there and she was like, are you on the list? And I'm like, nah. She was like, sit tight, I put you on here. So I was like, cool, do my audition. Everything's cool. Few weeks later, I was in Nashville, because I had come up to Nashville to do, what's that, Comedy at the Wazoo?
Yeah, Comedy at the Wazoo, Zany's.
I had come up there. This was my first time performing at Nashville. And set didn't really go all that great. It was cool. Wasn't nothing to really write home about. It was all right. Mm-hmm. I was, you know, kind of in my feelings about it. But as we do as comics. So the next morning, I stayed with my little brother. My little brother lived in Nashville at the time. And I didn't get a chance to see him that much. So I was like, well, I'm just going to hang out in Nashville a couple of days, man. Kick it with you, whatever. Next morning, I got an email. And it was from the people that was doing the Kevin Hart show. So I was like, oh, shoot, this is real. So I called them, and the guy was like, hey, you know, saw your video. You made it to the last selection round. He was like, we're going to pick 4 comedians. And right now we've narrowed it down to 10. So stay by your phone, keep checking your emails. So by the end of the day, it's like maybe about 10 o'clock in the morning at this time. So he's like, yeah, so by the end of the day, we're going to reach out to let you know if you made it or not, you know, so just keep looking out for us. So I hang up the phone, and I'm not one of those people that was like, oh, Junk, I'm a finalist for this Kevin Hart show. Didn't say nothing. Me and my brother go eat lunch. I'm sitting at the lunch table. I'm sitting at the table eating. A New York number calls my phone. So I answer the phone, and the guy's like, yeah, this plug. I'm like, yeah, this plug. He's like, congratulations, man. We picked you for the Kevin Hart taping. So I like push away from the table. And everybody's looking at me like, what the hell's wrong with this dude? So I push away from the table, and I'm just like, hey, I'm gonna be on TV. And everybody was like, all right, cool. Enjoy your chicken. All right, great. So my brother's all excited. And so the guy's like, you still there? You still there? So I'm like, oh yeah, what's up? So he's like, well, yeah, we filming in Atlanta tomorrow morning. So gave me all the details. So I told my brother, I'm like, hey, I might have to catch you next time, man. Take me to the Greyhound station. And I literally, man, I still don't really have a set. I have a bunch of jokes. Mm-hmm. And I just kind of put them together and make my idea of what will work together, what will be good for this show. And so essentially, that's what I did. They told us we had up to 10 minutes to perform. And I literally spent the rest of that night. Once I got back to Atlanta, I was just in my living room, just sitting there looking through my joke book like, all right, what I'm going to do, what I'm not going to do. And yeah, the rest is history.
That is awesome, man. And you know, first of all, I watched it and I thought you was hilarious, which you are. You are a fantastic comic. You are a funny, funny comic.
Appreciate that, brother.
But I can only, I mean, well, this is the cool thing. This is the super cool thing, man, is that, you know, most guys never get that opportunity. And I think it's awesome that you got that opportunity. And the other cool thing is I like to see people succeed. I do. I love it. But I especially love to see people succeed who I know have put in the work and the grind like you have.
Man, it's funny you say that, because, you know, the day of the taping, every comedian in Atlanta came out to the taping. And a lot of guys, I ain't going to say they were necessarily hate, but yeah, they were kind of hating.
Oh, yeah.
It was more of those, one of those, who the hell is this dude? Because I'm a comedian that I think I can work anywhere. I can do urban rooms. I can do mainstream rooms. But the thing is, I really don't do a lot of urban stuff because, for one, the politics just kind of get on my nerves half the time. I don't have time to sit around waiting all night to possibly go up. And they just steal too many jokes. It is so many recycled jokes in the urban scene, you know? And so that's a lot of the reason why a lot of the guys that mostly work on that scene didn't know me. So they kind of felt some kind of way that I had made it to this opportunity to be on television. And half of these people had never seen me do comedy before.
Well, you know, like, Atlanta's one of these towns that so much is happening in Atlanta right now. Really, there is. I mean, hell, that's like the Hollywood of the South. You know what I mean? Yeah. But I think one of the problems with that is that you got people that never leave Atlanta. You know, they don't get out of Atlanta. You do. You get out and you're around. People know who Plug Chapman is. You know, you get out and you network, and networking is a big deal, a part of this business.
90% of it.
Yeah. So it creates a lot of opportunity. Well, let me ask you this, man. So what got you started in the comedy journey? What got your journey in comedy going?
I was in the music business for pretty much 2005 until maybe around 2010 when I started comedy. And I moved out to LA. I was here in Atlanta, just kind of, you know how you feel like you at a dead end sometimes and you just need a change of pace, change of scenery. And at the time, I was managing some singers and songwriters and producers that I really, you know, really believed in. And I moved out to LA. I told my job, it cut my hours down. I was working like 10 hours a week. I wasn't doing nothing here, pretty much. And so I just told my family, I'm like, yeah, I'm about to move to LA. And they was like, for what? Only a few of my family members were kind of supportive. My dad was like, hey, man, if you feel like you need to go to LA to get your life together, bye. You can always come home. Yeah. Mom wasn't really that supportive. None of the women in my family were supportive. So I go to LA. First week in LA, I get a job interview to be an assistant A&R at Interscope. So I'm like, I'm not really no Jesus freak, but I grew up in the church. And so I still have a spirituality like aspect to me. And I remember growing up how you would hear the saying, well, if you take the first two steps, God will take the rest, or however the saying goes. So to get that interview, like within a week, I was just like, oh, this is real. Like, I didn't move way across country. Dude, rocked the interview. I'm talking about rocked it. The lady who was interviewing me, she was like, man, if it was up to me, you could start work today. She was like, you perfect. You got the experience. You know the game. Let me talk to the guy who you will be working directly for. So next week, we're going to get you back in here. We got to get your badge, get all your paperwork. So I'm good. Never heard from these folks again. Never heard from them again. And so now I'm still continuing to knock on doors, go to record labels. I'm going to Capitol, Interscope, Atlantic. I'm going to all the labels. And they were feeling the music, but they were like, not right now. And so I went through a phase out there because I'm like, all right, I have picked up and moved 2,000 miles away from everybody I know. I've left my daughter back home. So I started praying about it, man. I was like, what am I supposed to be doing? Please let me know. And man, for about a month straight, I kept waking up in the middle of the night and I couldn't do nothing but think about funny shit. I'm talking about I would wake up in the middle of the night and I would just be remembering stuff that had happened to me. And I was sitting in my bed cracking up. I'm talking about I would literally be laughing myself back to sleep. That's how much I was thinking about, like, just humorous things. The studio we used to record at was on the same block as the Ha Ha Cafe. And I remember getting off the train one day, I'm going to the studio, and there's a guy standing in front of the club, and I'm like, hey, man, y'all do open mic here? He's like, yeah, we do open mic Monday through Friday, every day, 5 o'clock. I was like, all right, I'll be back. And he kind of gave me this look like, you know how many times I hear that. And as a few weeks passed, same thing would happen to me. Kept waking up middle of the night thinking about funny stuff. So then I took it a step further. I said, well, let me start writing this mess down. So I just started writing. I would get my notebook and I would just write down. I didn't know how to format a joke, none of that. I would just write the stories out. And man, one day we get to the studio and the guy who owned it, he was like, y'all money ran out, so y'all can't record here no more. So I don't know what to tell y'all, but it's been nice working with you. Have a good one. And I literally left the studio, looked at my watch, and it was like 4:20. I'm like, I'm about to go to the comedy club. Went to the comedy club and just watched the show that day. And the next day I went back, did the open mic. And that was June
23rd,
2010. Wow. And ain't looked back since, man.
Now, how long was you in L.A.? How long did you stay out there?
I was out there for close to 3 years. I got out there January 10th, 2010, and I moved back to Atlanta Halloween 2012.
Okay.
So I just round it and tell people I was out there for 3 years.
All right. I hadn't been to L.A. I hadn't. And man, never? Now, this thing, I ain't shitting on L.A. comics. I am not. Okay? But I did a virtual mic over the pandemic and a bunch of LA comics, bunch of new ones.
Those suck, by the way.
Oh, they're horrible. First of all, they do super suck. They do.
Suck. They I stopped doing them.
Oh, yeah. I was like, I can't do this no more. This is awful. But man, some of them comics, I was like, damn, man, y'all shouldn't be in LA right now. If y'all's they were from everywhere else, but I was like, man, it seems like, man, y'all jumped the gun. Because y'all can't even tell a joke. You know, this was horrible. And I mean, I'm not all of them. I know they were new comics, you know what I'm saying? Probably way under a year. But it seems like sometimes people will make that jump out there prematurely when they're not ready. And there's so many good scenes, especially in the Southeast, man. Damn it. Atlanta's insane. Nashville, you know, there's some really good scenes in this area too, you know. To where you can develop and become a very good comic. But yeah, those virtual mics, awful. How many did you do? Yeah, I think I did. I think I did too. And I was like, man, I can't. But I just that, you know, of the pandemic, you get some new stuff. You're like, man, I gotta say it. I gotta get it out, you know. But I did it. And I was like, man, I ain't even. I'll just wait. You know.
Man, I did. Honestly, man, I did more script writing over the pandemic, and I had been working on a book that I put out a couple of months back. So I took that time. I really wasn't in a joking mood. I was just like, man, let me work on some other stuff that I can still work from home while, you know, you write a script. You can send that out and kind of get some traction on it, even if the world's kind of shut down. So
now you doing any of that acting game down there in Atlanta?
Man, I got to get back into it, man, because I did. I got a chance to work with Bobcat a couple of years ago.
Oh, damn, dude. Kevin Hart, Bobcat.
Gosh. Yeah, man, Bobcat so funny. First day on set, he walks up to me. He's like, hey, man, nice to meet you, man. I'm Bobcat. And I just shook his hand like, dude, I'm a comedian. I know who the hell Bobcat Goldthwait is. Like, if you can't call yourself, especially our age, you know, now maybe a 20-year-old comedian might not know Bobcat. But as a kid growing up in the 80s, Police Academy, baby. I know who Bobcat is. So now that was dope, man. As a filmmaker, and I tell them this, we talk every now and then. We might hit each other up on Instagram or something. And I tell them all the time, like, man, I learned so much from you those 2-3 days I was on set, just kind of watching how he does things and learning about various ways to shoot and how you can kind of get what you need from actors without really being that, hey, I need you to do it again, guy, you know? Mm-hmm. So yeah, that was a dope experience.
Okay, yeah, let me, two things I want to touch on now, because this is interesting. It's getting interesting now. First of all, though, before I go to the filmmaking thing, I want to ask, have you seen Bobcat's, his movie, Willow Creek?
Mm-mm.
Okay, get this. It's almost like a Blair Witch style type film, okay? But it's about Bigfoot. Now, normally, you know, you see Bigfoot movies, it's usually cheesy, horrible crap. But the way he does this, it is a masterpiece, brother. You got to check it out. It's called Willow Creek, okay? Definitely check that movie out. It was really good. Written by him. I was like, damn, it is really good.
Bobcat's dope, man. A lot of people don't know he directed a lot of that Chappelle show.
Oh, I did not know that.
I didn't even. We was at lunch one day, man, and he started talking about it. And we was just like, you did that? He was like, yeah. I was like,
damn, that is, I didn't know that. See? Yeah, wow. Man. Okay, this is something that literally I was thinking about this last week. Okay, no. This past weekend, we went and saw that new M. Night Shyamalan movie, Old, okay?
How was that?
I liked it. I did. And the thing is that it really touches with what's going on now, right now, what we're dealing with, like with vaccines and stuff, you know? It kind of makes you think, you know? He puts you in those thinking type of situations, you know?
Yeah.
And I like that. I like to think. Now,
let me ask you this, though. How was the ending?
You know, it
M. Night Shyamalan, his movies end so bad.
They do, but you know the thing, it had the M. Night ending. I'm just gonna be straight. But you know what though? The thing I like about M. Night Plug is that M. Night ain't afraid to take a chance. He's not afraid to take a chance. But anyways, this is the thing. You know, you are a filmmaker now, okay? And I start looking back at other filmmakers. And, you know, for years, we've only had really the big name filmmakers. We haven't had more diversity. Let me put it that way. A more diverse point of view. You know what I mean? Right. And, you know, like especially with Black folks, the artistic side is so rich in Black culture, you know, but it seems like we haven't really had our real true Black filmmakers shine yet. Do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah. And
I think there's an opportunity there, something for television that we are still waiting for.
Yeah, it's the way the business has been shifting. A lot of times it comes in phases, and so the phase we in now is like starting. I noticed a lot with the George Floyd stuff after his untimely incident. A lot of people started, I guess the proper word would be standing up for Black people, people of color, unrepresented, mm-hmm. Voices for the most part. And so I said that to say, like on Twitter, for example, a lot of people who were, writers in writers' rooms or either showrunners or people who just have had certain levels of success, they started reaching out. They were like, hey, if you're a person of color and you're trying to get into the writing, like send us your samples. We want to read them. And it actually was one of those things. I sent out a few samples and I got some pretty good feedback from a few people. They were like, hey, make a few changes here and you should definitely submit this to some competitions. Or so that is kind of what I think started what we're seeing now. So you got Jordan Peele.
And Jordan Peele, let me say something about Jordan Peele real quick. I like his movies. Let me put it that way. I like his, some things I can criticize. I can be like, you shouldn't have done that. You gave too much away. You know what I mean? But Jordan Peele, I don't think is the answer to all, writers and Black filmmakers. I think it's a good start. You know what I mean? I think it's a Absolutely. Good start, but I think we have something that we haven't even tapped into yet in a level of creativity that I can't wait to see. I can't wait to see some of that creativity, what could come down the pipeline.
It'll be more. The reason why I brought his name up was more so.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, he's a popular name right now. Anyways, he's,
Once Hollywood saw the success that he could have, I think that has led more to trusting more people with that kind of responsibility.
Well, I love the fact, one thing I got to say, I love the way he's bringing back Candyman and he's bringing the original actor,
played Tony Todd.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I love
that. That dude is creepy as shit.
This new generation needs to learn to be scared as hell of Candyman.
Man, that movie scared the piss out of me when I was a kid.
So that's it. I love that, dude. I do love that. And I think it's cool, man. I love to see you because, like I said, man, you've got the grind plug. You started out with music and you was like, boom, I'm going to L.A., which that's scary as hell. I'm just going to be honest, making that leap. And then you turn around and put that same energy into comedy. And brother, you've had some awesome success. Really, you have.
Yeah, man. I'm just trying to keep it going, bro. We don't know how much time we got in this game. So,
God, you're so right.
And I feel like, honestly, man, I feel like I'd be taking too much. I haven't been grinding enough in my own mind because I'm like, dang. Because of some of the guys that I started with in LA, man, one thing is beautiful to see how everyone's journey kind of starts and goes different places. But some of the guys I started with, man, who I used to stand in open mic lines with, man, they doing 30, 40 city tours, some of them doing movies, but they all stayed out in LA where, the opportunities is a little bit more plentiful. But I'm not mad where I am, man. I appreciate everything that has come and what's to come,
Well, you're not in a bad spot. Atlanta's not a bad spot either. There's opportunity there. And the competition is thick, but the opportunity is there. Now with the filmmaking do you've got something that you're currently working on anything new about to drop? Anything?
Nah, I'm trying to put together. I've written some sketches that I'm trying, some short films. I shot one about a year ago and sound was messed up. So we about to try to reshoot that. I've been just kind of trying to develop. I got a couple of scripts that I'm kind of in the process of working on. So I'm just submitting those to competitions, just trying to build up some accolades behind those so I can try to sell them to somebody.
You know what? Hey man, in Knoxville, we've got the Knoxville Comedy Film Festival. Me and Chris Rogers run that. So if you've got any sketch stuff you'd like to send our way, man, put it in, submit it to the festival. Let me know.
When y'all doing it? When is it going on?
It's going to be in October. I got to know what the date is right off the top of my head. Chris knows. But yeah, I do some sketch comedy with them. And actually, you know, I had the pleasure of working with Kevin McDonald from Kids in the Hall on a sketch show. So yeah, I tell this story all the damn time, but he was doing a little tour through here and he put out like a casting call, like, hey, I need some sketches, you know, submit your sketches. And then, you know, so I put mine in and I got called in to read my sketch in front of him, which that was terrifying. But I get there and they got all these playwrights and all this stuff. And dude, let me tell you what I wrote. I wrote a sketch about a drunk superhero who doesn't have any superpowers at all. He's just a drunk. All right. But he thinks he's got superpowers. And it's called the Flask. Instead of the Flash. So anyways, though, man, I show Love up and it. I got this and I got to read that in front of Kevin and everybody's done read all their serious stuff. And I'm like, man, I'm a dumbass. What am I doing here? And I read it and he goes, Danny, you had no way of knowing this, but we had a sketch very similar to that for Kids in the Hall that never made it. I love it. I was just like, oh, Cole, you know. So the next day I get the email that I'm in the show. So nice. It was cool. But you know what I learned? That one thing I learned about sketch comedy there, because I hadn't done a whole lot of it prior to that, is that, you know, in stand-up, when you're on stand-up, it's you. You make the rules. It's your show. You know, you only worry about you. Sketch, you write something and in your head, you got a way you think they're supposed to say it, but they may say it some different. And you know what I mean? And you almost got to give over that control a little bit. That was a little difficult, man. That was.
That's writing, period.
Yeah.
I wrote, my cousin had a show on Amazon Prime. They just switched it over to YouTube. And I wrote season 2 of it. And I didn't act in it. I just was on set, you know, while they were filming. And I had to tell a few of the actors, like, nah, it's kind of meant for you to say it kind of snappy. They would be just reading it all lethargic. And I was like, man. So, yeah, you're right.
You know, sometimes nothing against actors, because, you know, I know a bunch of them, but a lot of them, you know, we want to get to the funny too. You know what I mean? We want to get to the funny. And sometimes them actors are drag their feet forever, taking you all that. Nobody wants to hear that, man. Let's get to the funny.
Funny, dog.
I also had the pleasure, I think it was back in March, I got a part in a film that's going to be out in October. It's going to be on Prime, but it's a comedy horror movie. And I play the part of a faith healer. I'm a Shim Sham faith healer. So looking forward to that. That'll be out. But them actors, they, you know, I don't call myself. I mean, it's hard to call myself an actor. I'm a comic. I'm a comic / magician. I'm a hack from way back, baby. That's what I am. So man, it's cool, dude. And I can't wait to see what you crank out. I can't wait to see what Plug gets out there, man. That's going to be awesome. Especially if you got some sketch stuff, man. I really want to see that come out, because I know that's going to be funny.
My problem is, man, when I write my stuff, I don't worry about locations and stuff like that, which you should, because I'll get to the point where I want to film it and be like, I don't have a cathedral to film this in. Or I'm sitting on a sketch now. I need a hospital. Well, I need just like a nurse room. It's called The Day. And it's about this guy that takes an HIV test in the morning. And how he spends his day waiting on those results. But you know, if they call you by 5 o'clock, it's not good news. So throughout the day, he keeps getting random phone numbers calling him. And it's like, it's people he knows. They just kind of fucking with him. So yeah.
And dude, hey, that, now you bringing back old memories for me. Old memories. I'll never forget that. This is back in the 90s, brother. I don't know if you had an HIV scare, but I did. I did back in the 90s. Back when shit, we had real pandemics back in our day, kids.
Right.
I had a damn, back in the 90s, I worked at a hospital. And I didn't, it wasn't even a fun HIV scare. You know what I mean? It wasn't because I was doing, you know. I was working at a hospital and I was doing the trash and I was doing a surgery trash. And I remember I grabbed this big old trash bag and I tossed it in my big old plastic trash container, and it had this metal bar in it, and it stuck me in my arm. Well, before I looked at it, it also had some dry blood on it. And then I was like, oh, hell, you know. So I went to the little infection center, whatever, and they was like, yeah, we got to test you. And I was like, okay, all right, you know. Got tested, didn't think nothing about it, went on with my business. Well, then it was like a few days later, I get a phone call at the house. And they say, Ms. Whitson, are you coming into work today? I said, yes. Well, before you come to work, this was on a Friday. So, Ms. Whitson, are you coming into work Monday? I said, yes. They said, Monday, we need you to come talk to us as soon as you get here. Oh, no.
That was the longest weekend ever. Brother, that
ruined everything, man. I was overthinking. I was like, I've got AIDS. I'm dead, man.
Start writing your will.
I was, dude. I was talking to my boys. I was like, man, dude, I started thinking about every dumb thing I'd ever done, you know. I was like, why'd I mess with that nasty ass, you know. I mean, it just everything was just haunting me. And Monday morning, I walk in there, and she goes, oh, we just forgot to have you sign this. You're good. And, I mean, it was a sigh of relief and frustration all at once, you know. So
I feel like they could have told you that on the phone.
I know. They could have told me that over the phone, man.
They some dickheads for that.
That was wrong, dude.
They could have been like, hey, you good, bro. Come in when you get to work. You got some forms to fill out.
That
everything
was
good.
Yeah, dude. Man, that was bad. But yeah. So yeah, we had the shit, the real pain. It was tough growing up back then, brother. We couldn't have unprotected sex and all this stuff like you kids can these days, you know. Y'all. Like people, HIV, hell, people live now, shit. But back then, you know, if you weren't Magic Johnson, your ass was dead.
I still don't want this shit. I don't give a damn. How long these for? You can tell me HIV, you can live to 200. I'm like, nah, I'm cool with about 85, 90. I don't even need them extra 115. I'm good, bro. I'm good, dog.
Oh, man, dude. Yeah, it was crazy. Well, I tell you what, man, let's do this. Because here on the Abracadam podcast, we always have to ask, okay? Plug Chapman, I need to hear a hell gig story.
Oh, man. I got two. All right. So the first one, it's this website called Gig Salad. I'm sure you're familiar with Gig Salad as a comedian slash
magician. Corporate stuff, yeah.
Dude, I got booked. Both of my hell gigs come from Gig Salad, matter of fact. I got plenty of them, but these two just kind of stick out. The first one, I got booked to do a baby shower.
What?
Yeah.
That is
so funny. I'm trying to tell jokes while people are getting meatballs and fixing plates. It's people walking in, they greeting each other. What's up, girls? I ain't seen you in 5 years. Who the hell is this on stage talking? So I'm talking about, and see me, man, I'm a comedian. So you got a comedian, you got comics. I'm trying to be a better comic to where you kind of in the moment and I'm able to just kind of make fun and make light. But I'm such one of those people, like it can go off the rails fast. So I just pretty much, looking back on it, I should have been more adaptive and just kind of talk to people and, you know, did some crowd work. But I'm seriously up there trying to run a 30-minute set while these people are having a baby shower.
Oh, my
and
God.
No one is paying attention. I'm talking about, I'm literally on a stage. Like I say, people are fixing plates, bringing in gifts, hugging the girl who's pregnant. And I asked her, I'm like, after the set, she's like, you want something to eat? You can get some food. I'm like, I'm getting the hell out of here. I don't want nothing. I don't need to see these people's faces no longer. And I asked her, I'm like, why did you think having a comedian, maybe why not a jazz player or a singer, rapper? Why did you want to have a comedian at a baby shower? And she was like, oh, well, my friend had one and everybody loved it. And I was just, I'm thinking, I'm like, well, who was the comedian? She was like, oh, DC Young Fly. I'm like, so y'all had a famous comedian. Big difference than somebody who no one has knows. Because when you famous, you give people a reason to listen.
Yeah, yeah.
No, I'm talking about, dude, nobody paid attention. second one. So I get booked to do a corporate gig down in Fort Walton Beach. It was for this gas company down there. Christmas party. It's their annual.
Oh,
when is Christmas party? So I'm talking to the guy that books me. He was like, yeah, you know, the material, you know, we just kind of want PG-13. You know, the age range is going to be like 18. It'll be some older people. So it might be from 18 to 80. But, you know, just PG-13. Prior to him finding me on Gig Salad, I had an assistant at the time. And I had told my assistant, I was like, change out my, because I had a video, just a regular video that had curse words in it.
Yeah.
I told her, change out that video and put a clean video up. I'm under the assumption that she had done this. So I'm thinking that the guy had seen the clean video, but he had seen the dirty video. So I get there, I'm supposed to do 45 minutes for, I think they was paying me $2,500. Yeah, 45 minutes. So I get there, man. Not only first red flag, the show was at the same hotel where I was staying. So everybody's in the same hotel. Everybody is there for the Christmas party. So I get there, get to the show. It's dead. Like it's just everyone in there is just going through the motions.
They don't want to be there.
Yeah, I can just see the look on everybody's face. So now that's about big ballroom. It's probably about 300 people. Now I'm in Florida, but it's like what we call Lower Alabama. It's like that.
Yeah, yeah.
That panhandle area. So there's people in there with their Auburn Tigers shirts on, and Auburn had just got whooped by Georgia in the SEC championship. We had just whooped Auburn in the SEC championship. So I get there, man. I started out. I'm doing like some of my just kid-friendly, some of my, you know, what we call the corny material that all the old people like. Mm-hmm. Now, all the powers that be, the guy that had booked me and everybody, they sitting up in the front. They taking up like the first two tables. I'm looking out at the crowd. The only people really enjoying it is the powers that be, the big wigs. The rest of the room is sitting there like, oh my God, this is terrible. So Danny, I had a decision to make as a performer. I say, boy, I looked at my phone because, you know, we keep our time. I look at my phone. 7 minutes had gone by. Seven. I'm thinking like, all right, if I'm at the 20-minute mark, I'm cool. 7 minutes had gone by. And at that time, man, I said to myself, I am not about to take no L. I am not finna sit up here and eat dolphin nuts for the next 30 minutes, 35 minutes. Not happening. So I start going in, bro. I start hitting them with the haymakers. And I didn't, you know, I'm not really a dirty comic, fuck bitch, something dick. I ain't really one of those guys.
Yeah.
But, you know, I dropped some shit, some ass. Yeah. But he said PG-13. And in today's society, I watch PG-13 shows and you see tits and shit, you know what I mean? So I'm like,
that's true.
Right.
That's true.
So needless to say, walk some people. Some older people got up. They were pretty mad. So the best part though was after the show. After the show, like I say, everybody's still in the same hotel. So now I was the final act for the night, of course. So everyone has spilled out to like the back patio area, which is on the beach. So everybody's kind of like on the beach, you know, woo woo. So I go outside, smoke me a joint. And some of the people came up and was like, the HR lady, she comes up to me. She goes, I've been with this company for 20 years. She was like, this was the best Christmas party we've ever had. Thank you so much for coming. She was like, they're never going to hire you again, but thank you for coming. So this one guy, I'm standing around like most of the younger people, they was fooling with it. They enjoyed it. So by the time I came out, when I was out there, they was all coming up like, yo, let's get a picture. Yo, let's get you want a beer? Let's do it. This one guy comes out and he just got this look on his face. And he was like, he walks up, not close enough to be punched, but like close enough to where I could hear him. And he was just like, how do you feel? You proud of yourself, you asshole? And I'm like, huh? He's like, man, my grandmother was in the crowd. You up there talking about sex. I was like, dude, you know, your grandma fucked for you to get here, right? I was like,
I love it.
I was like, your grandma done seen a few dicks in her life. She be all right. And so he said something else. I said, hey, man, I'm about to go back to Atlanta. You got to work with these people, man. Do not let your coworker see you get punched in your face, dude. Like, I will beat your ass out here, bro. That is so awesome. He left. And yeah, man. So it went from hell gig to like redemption gig.
I love it, dude.
The best part, though, was the review the guy left me on Gig Salad.
Oh.
He gave me like 3 stars. He couldn't give me 1 star because once I started doing my thing, I started rocking. Like,
yeah.
The powers that be were all sitting there like, oh my God. But everybody else in the crowd, they was on board. And the review wasn't that bad. He was just like, pretty much like a miscommunication. He was like, we expected, you know, like a squeaky clean set. And, you know, yeah. He said he started doing material that was more fit for a nightclub.
Then well, he was like, he didn't throw you under the bus. He didn't throw
you under the bus. No, because I did my time. And he did say that. He was like, Plug went through 45 minutes effortlessly. I was like, hey, I started doing my thing, but I wasn't finna take that L, bro.
That's awesome, dude.
I go back to Fort Walton Beach like 3 months after to do a spot called The Block. I don't know if you ever heard of it. And do the show, standing out by the bar, 2 people come up and they was just like, you know how you come up and you might recognize somebody, but you think you might know somebody?
Yeah.
But they like looking at you like, so they walk up, they was like, dude, what's up? And I'm like, what's up? They was like, we was at the Christmas party a couple months ago. I was like, oh shit, what's up, man? They was like, well, we didn't think you was ever coming back to Fort Walton. I was like, man, them folks ain't finna run me out of town, man. Screw them.
That is awesome, dude. Hell yeah. Yeah. You know, those corporate gigs suck because, I mean, they pay great. Don't get me wrong. But most of the time, people there, they don't want to be there. They're there because they have to be there.
Yeah.
You know, and it's a work thing, you know. So, but, I mean, you know, a lot of times you go up there and it's just, like I said, you know, it sucks. But that's awesome, though. That's awesome that you was able, because I've been in those situations, too, where you're like, man, you know what, dude, I ain't, screw this. I'm not doing this like this. I know exactly how you feel.
I'm not taking this L, bro. That was too long. It was too long.
Let me ask you this, man, because I meant to ask you this from the beginning. I want to just touch on this real quick. Now, you talked about Bobcat, but did you get to spend any time with Kevin Hart? Did you get to talk with him any, hang out with him any?
Yeah. So before we actually went to tape the sets, we had a roundtable interview with him where he just kind of talked about, you know, his journey and wanted to know more about, you know, how we had gotten to the point where we were that day. And he asked Bomb story. And I told him one about taking a date to a show in LA and I bombed so bad she went home with the host. Like, yeah, dude, I could write a whole book about bombing, bro. I got some stories, brother. But yeah, so after we talked with him, we went up. Oh, one of the comedians, we filmed the interview portion at one of our most popular strip clubs. And one of the comics on the show, he was like, man, I ain't never been in here. And Kevin was like, you live here. You ain't never been in this club. He was like, nah. So he was like, all right, after the show, we coming back to the strip club. And we gonna kick it. So after the show's over, he comes in the green room. He's dapping everybody up. He's congratulating us. You know, good job, man. Y'all keep doing your thing. So one of the comments was like, what's up with the strip club? So he goes, man, I just got married. Man, I can't go to no strip club with y'all. He was like, oh, but he goes in his pocket he pulls out a knot. I'm talking about he pulls out a knot, dude. And he just peels us all off like $200. He was like, man, y'all go enjoy yourself, man. Y'all deserve it. Y'all all go to the strip club on me.
That is awesome.
I went and bought me an ounce of weed. I ain't gonna lie.
Well, you're a veteran. You know. Yeah, you ain't gonna spend your money on no strip club.
I ain't spending my hard-earned joke money on no women.
Nah.
I'm going to buy me some reefer. That's what I did. But now Kevin was cool, man. Real down-to-earth dude, man. Real down-to-earth dude.
That is
definitely cool. Hasn't let his success, you know, kind of interfere with who he is as a person.
It's insane, dude. He is grinding. I mean, he's in everything. Every damn thing. Everything. He's in.
Yeah, man.
So, and I mean, I don't hate on him for that because, you know how comics are. You know, it's like when you get super famous, they start hating you. You know what I mean? And, dude, he's getting it while it's good. He's getting it while he can get it, you know? So, because, you know, most of this stuff is temporary. So,
yeah,
you know, he's getting it while he can. So, yeah, I don't hate on him at all.
Take advantage, man.
Absolutely. Well, let me ask this. Go ahead.
I was gonna say we blessed though with what we do because it's a little bit more longevity in comedy than it is in like rapping or acting or being a singer. Like, you know, that's the good thing.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, a lot of times I'll gripe and complain about some things, but then whenever I look and I'm just like, you know, I get to do this, you know, and I get to make people happy. I get to, there's nothing, there's not a drug, there's nothing that can compare to that feeling when you on stage and you killing a room and that energy is just flowing.
Yeah. The
things that you're doing, you know what I mean? You can't.
Maybe cashing a check for $1 million, but I don't know what that feels
maybe.
Like.
Yet. I don't either.
So hopefully one day I'm able to compare the two, like, you know what? I still think making a room full of people that don't know you laugh is really higher than. But yeah, I want those. That sounds like a good problem to have.
That's true. That is true. Well, let me do this. Let me do this real quick because I also ask a thought-provoking question here on the Abracadam podcast. And Plug, you are a thinker, my man. You are a thinker. So let me ask you this. If there was a conspiracy theory about Plug Chapman, what would it be?
That my famous uncle has helped me get to the level of success that I have reached.
So you got a famous, now here, okay, the famous uncle, now would it be like a Brewster's Million famous, you got like a famous old white uncle?
I wish. If I had a famous white uncle, well, I'd have been out of here, boy. No, white folks, y'all help each other. Y'all got family members. You ain't even got to like a motherfucker. You'll still help them. You're like, yeah, that's my nephew. I don't talk to him that much. But go ahead and write him that check for that little equipment he needs. Whatever. What'd you say?
No, go ahead.
Nah, my uncle's a rapper.
Oh.
But he has made it to great heights in the rap industry. But yeah, it's a lot of people here in Atlanta who really thought, like, he had pulled some strings for me to help me get to where I am. And I'm like, little do they know, I don't even talk to this mother, man.
Who is
somebody called me today and was like, hey, man, we want to get your uncle to try to sponsor something. I'm like, I ain't got no number on him. Y'all better off hitting this dude on Instagram trying to go through me.
Who is your uncle? Can you say?
Oh, it's T.I. T.I.P.
T.I.P. And so he's a famous rapper?
Yeah.
That's cool, man. That's cool. But yeah, people think though sometimes just because you're related that you got some type of hookup. Yeah, that's not how. Yeah, I totally.
Yeah. Not at all, man.
So I bet that started all kinds of damn rumors and stuff with you getting the work and opportunities you got. I bet they think it's his famous uncle.
Yeah, I'm like, I could understand how people could think that, but nah.
But now you put in the grind, dude. You do. You are there when you need to be there. You put in the work. And something else I want to add real quick about Plug Chapman, y'all. If y'all listening, if you have not seen Plug stand up, definitely see it because he's funny as hell. But one thing you do got, brother, is you got that one thing that most comics have to work really hard to figure out is you got the likability. You got a charm to you. You've got that spell that an audience will watch you and they'll be like, I just like this guy. You know what I mean? So you do got that. And that's something, some comments can figure it out. You know what I mean? But then some people are just born with it. That's one thing about you. You can watch your set and just be like, I'm laughing. I like this guy, you know? So that's one thing you got.
Yeah, you can't teach that in comedy class.
No, you can't. You cannot teach it.
I was always told, man, even if you're not being funny, be likable. Be
absolutely. Be,
and so I think hearing that at such a young age in the comedy game, it always stuck with me. You know, it's like, yeah, some nights, man, you might not be killing it on stage, but if you still are able to capture everyone's attention for those 5 or 10 minutes, you still did your job.
Yeah. And I mean, that's what I'm saying. You've got that likability factor. I mean, you see some comics that hop up there and they just want to be a straight asshole. Well, man, if you're going to be an asshole, brother, you better be funny. You know what
you
I mean?
Better be funny. Yes. That's why, like, with my comedy class, this guy was like, are we forbidden from doing rape jokes? I looked at him. I said, hey, man, that shit better be funny. And I told him, I say, bro, I've been doing comedy a decade and I have heard maybe 2 rape jokes that was funny. I've heard hundreds of them. Yeah. Maybe 1 or 2 that was like, okay, that was funny.
That's the problem with what I always tell people. I'm like, I don't believe any topic is off the table in comedy, but there's very few people who got the skill level that can talk about any topic and make it funny.
Right.
So it takes a certain skill level to be able to talk about those topics. And I don't know. I've heard a lot of people try and I'm like, man, that's dumb. You should have just left that alone, dummy. You know? Yeah. So, I will tell you this. I always bring this up. I never was a big Doug Stanhope fan. I never really was. I didn't understand his, because he's got that cult following. People love some Doug Stanhope.
Oh, yeah, boy. Them folks will fight your ass about Stanhope.
They will. And I was like, what is the deal? And then I watched that one special where he told a joke about his mom's suicide and made it funny. And I laughed. And I didn't think I'd be able to laugh at that topic. Yeah, and that showed a skill level from Doug Stanhope that I was like, whoa. And basically what it was is she was taking one of those suicide pills. So she was dying on her terms. You know what I'm saying? And he was talking about it and going on about it. And he's like, and as soon as I gave her the pill, I said, mom, you're not going to believe this. They found a cure. Mom, you know what I'm saying? And I start laughing, man. And I'm like, man, I can't believe I'm laughing at that shit. But I mean, my point being, though, is like Doug's got that skill level to where, you know, if he wants to talk about those topics, he's able to make it funny. Now, somebody who's been doing comedy for 20 minutes is going to hop up on stage and talk about some topics that he shouldn't even be talking about. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So
it's even stuff, man, for me, even in year 11, it's some stuff that I haven't been able to figure out how to make funny yet. Like a couple of years ago when my mom passed, I wrote some things about it, just kind of trying to, you know, my grieving process. And now I haven't been able to make them funny on stage yet. And I've tried. And it's just like, death is a hard topic.
It is, man.
And I've seen people pull it off, but.
Yeah, some people can pull it off. I don't touch it. I don't go near it. And also, man, let me say this, man. Hey, I remember whenever you was dealing with that, you know what I mean? And I know how you feel, brother. And it's that's a tough topic too, you know. But it is. There was one topic I touched around for just a minute, but I was like, man, I don't even think this is really worth my time. But it was almost a rape joke, but it wasn't. It was talking about, man, I want to get in shape, but I want to get a raper's body, because like I remember one day I was running. I was out doing a jog.
And
I was getting close and this lady was coming the other way. And I noticed when she saw me at first, she clinched. But then as she got closer, she went like this. And then come on by. And I was like, what kind of bullshit is that? Now she's she, it's like if she got close, she was like, ah, he ain't gonna do shit.
He ain't, you know? I can
So I was like, man, what kind of rules? I need to get like a raper's body, man. Damn, I need to look, you know. But I played around with that and I was like, nah, I don't know, man. It's just, you know, because it's such a dark
time. Shit don't, you know, it don't really be, the juice don't be worth the squeeze sometimes.
But it's also, exactly. And it's also weird that now, okay, let me ask you this, man, because, you know, you have a lot of comics voicing the cancel culture type of thing. Is it real? Is it not real? Can we say things? Can we not say things? And I mean, like I said, I mean, I believe if it's funny, say it. But, you know, what's your take on that?
Just what you said. If it's funny, then say it. If it's your truth, say it. But if you just going for shock.
Yeah.
Don't do it. Like, yeah. I had a student once and she had a joke about, it was kind of about rape, but she had been through it. And I was just like, if you can figure out a way to make it funny, go for it, because that's your truth, you know?
Yeah.
If you're just thinking about telling a rape joke, something that you just made up, don't do it.
Yeah.
So, but we live in a society, man, for lack of a better term, just society has really gotten pussyfied lately in these last few years, man. Like, I always joke around and say that I should have been a comic during the Def Jam era, because back then you could say, and it ain't even just, it's mostly, I'm never going to host no Oscars or nothing, because if they're going to look at my old tweets, they're going to be like, fuck this misogynistic asshole. But it's really the gay community, man. Like, you know, nothing against them folks. Hell, I got family members that's a part of that community. I got friends that's a part of that community. But the irony is they can talk shit about everything. But the moment you turn a joke on them, they get all butt hurt, no pun intended. But yeah, you know, they get all in their feelings, man. And that's just like.
Hey, I agree with you. You can't have one and not the other. So and I'm with you. And I think that's something that people are going to have to learn. Eventually they'll learn. Because everything, intent is everything. Really, it is. A joke is a joke is a joke. Come on, man. You know, you got to relax, you know. But yeah, I'm with you. I think we've gotten way too sensitive on stuff. And I hate to see, and also there's something too that makes you tough. You know, there's something, you know, me and you, we had real bullies. We had bullies that would beat your ass. You know, you had to fight that bully. You know, we didn't have a bully behind a screen talking shit.
Hell no.
I mean, we had real bullies. And I think, though, we're starting to see something else with these fake these cyber bullies. You know, people's like, you can't say this about me. No, if they say it, this is how you deal with it. You know what I mean? So I think we're starting to see lack of communication of dealing with things. You know, they don't know how to properly deal. They can't tell the difference between a joke or an actual real insult.
Yeah, that's the thing. And at comedy shows, it's so crazy because you come in there for humor.
It's not an insult.
How are you getting offended at something that's intended for humor? If you was paying $20 to go to a segment called Mean Talks, then I can understand you not wanting to hear certain words or certain phrases or certain joke topics. But you come into a comedy show.
That's true. That's absolutely the truth.
I did a show one night, and we got a gay comedian here in Atlanta who's real popular, funny dude. And he was hosting the show. And I did a joke about buff gay guys. And I had literally just went through this, like, 2 weeks prior to this show, where some buff gay dudes was hitting on me. And so I told this joke about it. And after the set, and after he, you know, I come off stage, he brings the next comic up. He comes over and he's just like, you know, Plug, you're so much better than that. And that's just like a hacky joke. And I was like, but I went through that.
Yeah.
So am I not? I can see if I just sat and was like, oh, let me tell a gay joke and piss people off. Let me pull this out of my ass.
Yeah. Yeah.
But this happened to me. So I'm not allowed to talk about it but what's funny is most of the gay people that come to the show, if I do that joke, they laugh. So yeah, man,
there's your result then. There's your answer.
It's hard, man. It is hard being a stand-up comedian in this day and age.
You know what, man? I couldn't imagine being like in my early 20s. Having to date and having to do all that stuff these days. When I look at that, I'm like, gosh, man, I feel sorry for you dudes. I feel sorry for you girls and dudes, both of y'all. Y'all are just y'all weird as hell.
Dating is a whole different animal.
So. I couldn't imagine that, man. Anyways, let me do this, okay? Now, every Abracadam podcast episode, I got to show a magic trick, brother. So here we go. I gotta show you some magic. You ready for some magic? Yes!
About to make some money appear in my Cash App.
Well, I wish I was that good. Here we go.
I know that's right. So she wouldn't need to be doing none of this if you was that good.
I tell you what, we're gonna do some mind reading. All right. Now I'm gonna try to read your mind. Here we go. Here, what I'm gonna do, I'm gonna show you some cards right here, Plug. You see them?
Yeah.
All right, I want you to think of one of those cards. Just think of one. Don't tell me. Just think of
it. All right.
All right, here we go. Let me do this. We're going to lose the cards in the deck. All right. I'm going to cut the deck right here, Plug. Now, I'm obligated. I've cut right here. In a loud voice, what was the card you're thinking of?
An eight. Yeah.
Is it a red eight?
Oh shit. I don't remember. I think it was red.
Was it the eight of diamonds?
Yep.
Bingo, baby. Boom, you've been abracadabbed, my man.
Yeah, that's a good one. Man, I've always been mesmerized by that shit. You ever seen that joke that magic trick Bob Place does?
No. I haven't. What does he do? I gotta get Bob on here.
When you come down to do the laughing skull, he'll probably do it. But he pulls an audience member up and he lets them pick a card in the deck. And then he'll go through, and then I don't know how he does it, but at the end of the trick, the card is inside of a Coke can.
Nice.
Yeah, bro. That shit is weird. And nice. When I tell you that's one of the hardest things to follow, boy, when he does that magic trick, good luck if you next.
You know, it can be, you know, man, with me, you've seen me do stand up more, you know, and my show is a combination now, you know, because I started out doing magic before doing stand up. I was street performing and stuff like that. And when I got in the comedy club, I came in as the magician, but I was like, you know, I started emceeing at the club here in Knoxville. So I had to learn actual stand-up comedy. You know, I had to learn to be a comic. Yeah. And you can't learn stand-up by doing any props or doing magic. You know what I'm saying? It's just got to be you and that mic, baby. And you know what I'm saying?
Right.
So I spent a couple years just doing stand-up just to learn the art of stand-up. And then I combined magic and stand-up together for my act. So a lot of times, like, you know, I will tell a bit in my show and then there'll be a callback to it in a magic trick, you know, like, it's like a whole combo of both. It's took me a long time to make work because stand-up is telling the truth and magic is bullshit. So to make it both work, you know, it's just
you gotta walk a fine line.
But anyways, yeah, man, I can't wait to get down there, dude. I would love to. You know, I've got a lot of stuff. You know, I'd like to get down there. I'd like to get you out there. I'd like to hang out with Plug, man. When next time I get down there, too. Actually, I'm gonna be down there November 21st at the Red Light Cafe.
Damn, man, my birthday the 20th of November. I'm gonna be in Orlando.
Ah, there you go.
Yeah, I'm going down. I'm going to be in Orlando from the 18th. Now, I might come back early that day because the stuff that we're doing is just that 18th, 19th, and 20th. So the red light is what day? Sunday?
Yeah, it's a Sunday.
I might be back. All right. I might. How long are you going to be in town?
Well, hopefully, man, I'm trying to fill up that weekend. I'm working on trying to fill up that weekend.
Hit Rodney up, too, from Star Bar because, you know, Star Bar is that Monday.
Gotcha.
So that would be... That would be a good little show to do on the way back before you go back.
While I'm thinking about it, how did Stardom go?
It was cool, man. Have you done Stardom before?
Dude, I've never done it, brother. I've never done it.
Okay, so the girl that was hosting, she tells us, she comes in the green room before the show, and she was like, hey, just a heads up, the acoustics in this room is kind of weird. So you kind of got to be careful because she was like, you might not hear a lot of big, like, laughs unless they big. So just kind of work through it. So I think I went through that. So I had a pretty decent set. But
you see, my girl
told me after, because my family is brutally honest. So yeah. If I were to bomb, my cousin would have been like, well, you done had me invite my coworkers. But no, he texted me because I was in the back, and I'm like, hey, I'm about to come out in a minute, just kind of grabbing my things. And he was like, take your time. He was like, man, everybody loved you around that was sitting around me. So I was like, that's a good thing. Kind of freaked me out. It was full. I don't know what their capacity is, but I think it was, might not have been sold out, but it was pretty full. But it was 80% urban.
Yeah, yeah.
Which made me go, oh, shit.
I love urban rooms. I do good in urban rooms. I do, brother. I do.
Me, I'm hit or miss. It depends on what type. If it's like working class, been to college urban people, I can do all right. But if it's like thugs and people with gold teeth and guns and shit, nah. I got jokes about emails and shit like that. I did a 7-minute set. Just one joke when I talk about being a single dad. So it was cool. It was four comedians on that show from Atlanta, and we all did pretty good.
My girl Jazz was on there. Jazz Gill, that's my girl.
Oh, she just, bro.
I'm telling you. She
destroyed.
I knew she would, man.
She destroyed to the point where, like, I wouldn't be surprised if I see her on a Stardome flyer, like, before the month is out.
You know, Jazz, man, I had Jazz open for me at a show in Charlotte. And, you know, when you get that opener that is killing it, opening for you, you know your ass has to work now.
Got work, you know? Yeah.
So I had her open for me in Charlotte, and she killed it. And I was like, damn. I'm going to have to work, you know?
Bro, man. I was in the green room and could hear just like, man, she got several applause breaks.
That's my
She girl. Was getting some loud, big, big laughs to the point where I was standing back there going, boy, I'm glad I ain't got a pile of this here. And the girl I had to follow, she killed too, though.
That's good, man.
But yeah, it was cool though. I talked to Bruce after. He came up to me, told me good set, gave me his card. He was like, man, hit me up, send me your info. So I'm sure I'll get in there to work sometime.
Awesome, brother.
Yeah, well, I tell you what, it's gonna be this weekend, but you know.
I tell you what, Plug, before we get out of here, let the listeners know where can they find Plug Chapman Comedy. We got anything coming up, let them know.
Well, I keep it simple for everyone who's public school educated, man. It's Plug Chapman on everything. Instagram, Twitter. My website is Plug Chapman Comedy. Also, if you are into reading, go check out my book, man. I just put out a memoir that is, I don't know where would I put this book. It's humorous. It can go in the self-help section. It can go in the inspirational section. But it's called The King's Guard. Check it out. And yeah, man, I'm just working, dog. I would say everybody just check out my website, man. That'll keep you up to date with what I got going on. Coming to a city near you, and hopefully Australia, if you got the Australia followers listening to this.
Y'all hear that, Australia? There you go, Plug Chapman. Hey, I tell you what, Plug Brother, thank you so much for coming on the Abracadam podcast, man. This has been a blast.
Anytime, brother. I'm glad you had me, man. I appreciate the love, dog.
All right, that does it for that episode of the Abracadam podcast. I hope you guys enjoyed that conversation with Plug Chapman. And also, if you're in the Atlanta area or anywhere you get a chance to see Plug perform, definitely catch his stuff. He's a very funny comic. And be sure to check out his book as well. Also, if you guys have not done so, once again, be sure to follow and subscribe to the Abracadam podcast on whatever platform it is you listen to podcasts. And be sure to check out the YouTube channel, the Abracadam YouTube channel. I put these interviews on YouTube with a little bit of funny editing, throw some memes in there, try to make it interesting for you to check it out. And like always, Abracadamits, thank you for listening.
Freaking miracle. There you go.